First on the phone with us, we've got Charlie Sturgis with Mountain Trails Foundation. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Beautiful July 5th day to you. I hope you had a good 4th. Things are looking awfully spectacular out and about in town right now. Let's see, a bunch of things. First off, the storm last night and some of the previous storms about a week ago are putting some deadfall back onto the trail. So I already got some reports this morning from deadfall in various areas. So you're probably, the best thing we can tell you to do is a couple of things that really helps us out would be shoot a photo of it and take a pin drop if you can. That lets us get to the places as fast as possible and as easily as possible. And also lets us know how many people and what kind of equipment we might need. So if you can, photo and pin drop, and then, of course, you can just send it to Charlie or Rick at mountaintrails.org, and we'll make sure we can get up there. For this weekend, though, my entire crew is gone and out of town. So I think I'm the only man left standing here. So we will have to wait until after the weekend. Do want to let people know that Jupiter Peak Steeplechase is coming up next Saturday after this. And we will be using the Silver Spur Trail for all the way up to about noon. So if you can avoid it, it's really handy. So we are obviously on the way up on Crested Mine Grade, up the peak and down through Spiro and down on Silver Spur and Silver Spur all the way back to the finish area. So this is slightly different than one of the previous years, and we just hope you can cut the razors slack and think of a different place to be on that morning if you can. Also, there's a little bit different event, and I don't know how this one's kind of a little bit under the radar, but on that Saturday, the 6th, there's also there's also a archery event that's going on over at the canyon. This is apparently a huge event, and you will have people out in hunting gear and so forth. They're kind of roaming the woods and shooting targets. They will be crossing Mid-Mountain, but they won't be shooting across Mid-Mountain. But you will see some people dressed like hunters or equipped with bows and arrows on that Saturday that could be up on Mid-Mountain Trail area. So even though we have a no hunting kind of thing going on up there, this will be a little bit different, so just be aware of it. And it's not a big deal. It's a competition that's going on. Outside that, Leslie, I think we're kind of good to go. The weather's good for a while. We'll do the best we can to get trees out of the way starting in the beginning of the week. And otherwise, have a great weekend.
Okay. Interesting. I was wondering why I saw all of those leaves along the bike path this morning. So it must have just been the wind, huh, blowing them out?
Yeah, I mean, that was a pretty significant storm that came through, prior to the fireworks and whatnot. And certainly looked like down in Salt Lake they even had a higher winds. But I think I saw some winds as high as 70 miles an hour in various places. And then I have a friend that's out there at 5:30, quarter to 6 in the morning. He sent me a text. It's in a pretty long ride, and he said he ran into deadfall in any number of places. So it was a good wind. He said the riding was very good this morning. Everything was, the dust was down. So it should be awfully nice out there, but you are going to run into a few trees.
Okay. Thanks, Charlie. KPCW News Time now, 8:13. Well, on the phone with a look at some of the development projects happening around in Summit County, I have Community Development Director Pat Putt. Good morning to you, Pat.
Good morning, Leslie.
So as always, let's just start with any new developments that have come into your planning office?
No new developments since we last talked last month, but that's not necessarily a bad thing in our world with as much that's going on, both current development in and around the basin, the canyons in particular, some longer range projects on the east side like the Cedar Crest or Hoytsville Village Overlay. We're pretty busy. Doesn't mean that anything couldn't drop in on our desk here in the near future, but since we talked last time, no applications of significance.
Okay. Anything of note on next week's Snyderville Basin Planning Commission meeting?
Well, Tuesday night, the Planning Commission has a relatively light meeting. we only have one item on the agenda that night, and that is involving some text amendments to the Snyderville Basin Development Code, specifically targeting appeals of decisions, both of a staff level and a planning commission level. What we're looking to do is to help build in some predictabilities in terms of timelines for materials to be submitted, when those materials are shared between the parties. You know, from time to time, decisions are appealed, and in order to help all the players involved, we thought we would be well served by helping to build a better structure. It's probably not the most dynamic discussion we'll be having with the commission here this year, but it's an important one. They'll hopefully be making a recommendation. We're doing the same thing on the East Side Code, and really the point behind all of this is helping to make those appeals as predictable of a process as we can for everyone. Now, the Planning Commission meets Tuesday night, probably more importantly, the following evening on Wednesday. The Snyderville Basin Planning Commission is going to be sitting in joint discussion with the County Council. The topic at hand on Wednesday night is going to be the Snyderville Basin Development Code amendments, the updates, where we are, what progress we've been making. You know, there are a number of things we want to get in front of the council to talk about so we don't get ahead of ourselves. Particularly on the heels of the Kimball Junction neighborhood plan amendments to the general plan, we're going to be looking to see if we can improve the zoning ordinance that we have to help implement some of those strategies. One of the things that we've been talking about is the current general plan has about five areas that we've targeted as possible mixed-use development areas. Kimball Junction's one of those. What we want to be able to get feedback from the council is, in terms of moving forward in the future, how do we best achieve that? We currently have a community commercial zone that allows really a broad spectrum of uses. It's not a great tool when it comes to having a bit more flexibility in design. And what do I mean by that? We really don't have a provision to consider in the right locations, possibly a taller building in exchange for underbuilding or structured parking that might be able to give us more public space or open space. We don't have the ability to exchange possibly some building height for occasional workforce housing under that. We've been studying a neighborhood mixed-use zone that would allow those trade-offs to occur. But again, we don't want to get too far out in front of this without checking in with the council, because the next step, once some of those decisions are made or directions given, is we're going to need to begin to have this discussion with the neighborhoods and the public. So this is sort of a check-in before we begin to do that. Some of the other issues that, you know, we've been hearing about through this code development process are things like the number of accessory buildings that should be allowed on properties in the rural residential zone or the hillside stewardship zone. Should there be a limitation on that? Should there be a maximum size limitation on that? So we've been looking at some possible scenarios with that. But again, this will be a chance for the commission to talk to the council about that before we start bringing some of these options and ideas out to the public. And that'll be Wednesday. It'll be at the Richens Building, and it'll be at 6:30 p.m.
Okay. The wind farm in northern Summit County, the county's considering, looks like you had a good turnout for the open house. What were your takeaways?
Well, I was covering another meeting that night. Ray Milner and Peter Barnes were at that meeting, and we were pleasantly surprised with the folks that had turned out to learn more about the project, particularly given the fact that I think there were three or four other meetings going on that evening and another meeting at the Ledges Building at the same time. I don't think there were any huge carryaways from that meeting, from the members of the public who showed up. And speaking with Peter and Ray, most folks were just there to find out more about the project. How much, you know, what was the extent, how many wind turbines were being proposed, what were the steps ahead of us. There will be a work session on that project in front of the Eastern Summit County Planning Commission meeting on July 18th. So there's more education both from the Planning Commission standpoint and the public standpoint to come. But again, for the listeners who may not have heard about this project, what we're talking about is the possibility of a 100-megawatt wind-generating facility up Echo Canyon near the Wyoming border. It would allow between 30 to 39 wind turbines to be constructed. What would be approved potentially through this conditional use permit would be roughly 30 to 39 locations. Think of them as possible wind turbine pod areas. The precise location of them within those 39 pods would be determined as they moved closer to the actual installation of them, and that, I think, would have much to do with a number of factors, including not only the wind, but the wildlife, the noise, the view sheds, those sorts of things like that. What's intriguing about this is what we could potentially achieve in terms of generating green energy. From what we are being told, what's being explained to us, this facility is capable of powering 22,000 homes per year. I believe the plan is to take the energy created by these wind turbines and connect them directly into the main Rocky Mountain Power transmission line that runs nearby. So a work session with the Eastside Planning Commission on the 18th, and then we are targeting the first public hearing on August 15th. So okay. We're interested and excited to bring this out for further vetting by the public and the Planning Commission.
Anything new from the owners of the Colby School? It's been a year, I believe, since the project was turned down, and what we had heard that they had to wait a year before they could resubmit the same plan again.
Yeah, so the way our code works is that if you are denied, whether it's a conditional use permit or a final site plan, you can't come back with the same project and reapply immediately. There's a one-year period of time where it just has to be told, for lack of a better term. That period's actually expired. I think we're well beyond the one-year reapplication period. We have not had any recent discussions with the property owners. So we're in a wait and see what their next step or their next plans might be for the property. But it's been quiet in that particular case.
Okay. Any updates with regard to the South Point project? And this is on the Browns Canyon side of Promontory.
Well, I feel like I'm swinging and missing with you here today. No, quiet on that point as well. The applicants had withdrawn the South Point project application a little over a year ago. So we haven't had any further discussions on the South Point side of Promontory. There have been some discussions in front of the county council for the Promontory development agreement, the existing development. There is a proposal in front of the council right now for some considerations of some text changes for that development agreement. Specifically, what's being requested is consideration to allow for specific building sites within one of their development areas called the Pinnacles to have an increase in building size. Right now, there's a cap in this area of 10,000 square feet. They're proposing on specific lots to increase that to a gross of 22,000 square feet and allow for accessory caretaker guest units to be included in that amount, which is currently not permitted under the existing development agreement. There was a public hearing scheduled with council, I believe, a week ago. There was no action taken. The council wanted to be able to do a site visit, get on site up in that Pinnacles area, which if you were approaching Promontory from the Home Depot entrance, that west entrance, it would kind of be the top of the knoll of that development. They wanted to get out and see the property themselves and help evaluate whether or not they would grant that request. That's the only Promontory work that's been going on in front of the commission or the council to date. There's a lot going on. We probably have, I'm gonna throw a dart at the board, we probably have between 50 and 60 homes under construction. So there's a lot happening in the Promontory in terms of future entitlements or changes to entitlements. What I've just described is probably the limit to where we're at.
Okay. And finally, just wanted to ask you about the Crandall condominium construction project for New Park. That's been fenced off for, gosh, a while now. Any plans to build?
I believe we've actually cut loose the building permit for that project. Originally, what was approved by council, a decision they made based on an appeal, what was originally approved was a seven-townhome unit development. It was a little over 10,000 square feet. Council ruled in the favor of the property owner in that particular case. Shortly after that decision was made, the Crandalls came back and suggested that they were interested in a redesign of that project, more in keeping with what they had heard being the desire from the council and the public. And so what happened since that time is that there was some remaining development density available in the New Park area, and that density was owned and controlled by Basin Rec. It was like 12,400 square feet. The Crandalls purchased that density, redesigned the project, and so what that project includes now, rather than the seven-unit townhome project, it'll have about 12,000 square feet of retail commercial on the ground level, which I think that's what, a lot of people were hoping to see, is that continuation of that New Park Main Street sort of design and feel. That'll be on the ground level, and hopefully there's been talk about maybe part of that space being a restaurant that would, be able to back out onto the plaza area, the amphitheater area. And then above that, there will be two stories, for a total of three. And the second and the third floor will be deed-restricted workforce housing. So the permit's been issued on that. We'll probably see construction here very shortly. But at the end, I think we're going to have a project that is probably more in keeping with the original intent of the master plan, be a good fit with that main street, main level retail commercial core in that area, and get some workforce housing in a neighborhood that we think is appropriate for that. It'll be workforce housing in an employment generating area. The parking for that, we've been asked, well, if it's going to have ground floor retail and residential above, where's the parking going to be? The Crandalls control the parking structure just up the street, and there's going to be spaces reserved for those units there. So, again, we think that's kind of a win-win situation.
Okay, Pat, hey, thanks for your time this month.
Take care.
KPCW News Time now, 7:28. Well, now in its 37th year, Park City's Beethoven Festival is back in town. With the details, I have the festival's founders, Russell and Leslie Harlow. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Yeah, so let's see. The festival officially kicking off July 1st. What have you got for plans this year?
Well, we've just started out all of our rehearsals. The musicians are here, and we have 5 concerts on Sundays at Temple Har Shalom, and those are fantastically elegant concerts. They start at 4:30 with a pre-concert reception with wine and goodies, and then promptly at 5, we start with the performance. Then we have an intermission with more goodies and mingling and getting to know the musicians. We have great players coming.
And great music.
Yeah, the music this Sunday, I'd like to talk about that just a tiny bit. We have this really, really amazing program. There's a Spanish piece by Tarina that's gorgeous. There's a piece by Foray, a trio for clarinet, viola, and piano that is just brings tears to your eyes. We know because we played it for some people who said that. And some pieces by Brooke that are very romantic. And then we have the Debussy violin and piano sonata, which is beautifully impressionistic and exotic. So, and we have a piece by Crummer that's classical, and we'll play a little bit of that too. And so we just have wonderful players and a wonderful program.
Okay, different show every Sunday then.
Every Sunday.
Absolutely.
And for 5 weeks. And then the last Sunday, we have a private, it's not private, it's actually people can come to this. It's at a private home, a gala fundraiser. We also have a gala fundraiser on the 13th at a beautiful Park City home.
Of July.
Yes. And then we play 6 weeks in City Park at the Park City Park Bandstand, and it's the same players who are playing during the week.
That's Monday at 6:15.
Yes. Thank you, Russ. And
that's
then
okay. I'll feel
people
that.
Need to go to our website because we have a calendar on there. Then we have the chamber music hours, and there are 3 of those at Park City Community Church. And then we have 2 artist showcase concerts, and one is on the 10th of August, and the other one's on the 16th of August. So it's 20 concerts.
20 concerts. And okay. we're also going to do something new this year. We're taking off to Moab to do a concert there, and then we're going to go up to Ogden. Moab is the 18th of July, and Ogden is the 8th of August. And we're going to try to do that and sort of be the Park City representatives of...
The ambassadors.
Ambassadors.
Okay, mm-hmm. So the concerts, with the exception of those in the park, are ticketed events?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, and just different prices?
Different prices. The different concerts have different prices. The prices range from $15 to $45.
Okay.
And the fundraisers are $50 and $100 per person.
Okay. The ones in the park, however, free.
Are free.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And you play for what, a couple of hours, 90 minutes with a break?
About an hour and a half,
Yeah. Okay. Mm-hmm. And again, in terms of the musicians, you have people that just like to be part of this, so come back every year? Is that how it works?
Actually, we have some that have come back every year, and they are charter members. And then we have other players. All of our players are... outstanding classical soloists and recording artists, and we bring them and put them together. And we have a number of those that have been coming every year. And then we have some new players. We have a new pianist this year who is just phenomenal. He'll be here next week, and his name is Zhang Tu. And he was one of the concerto winners at Juilliard when he was a student there. And has won many competitions since then, but that's usually a hallmark of being an amazing player because there are so many phenomenal pianists there. And then we have a Bach Hour competition winner, Stephen Buse. He's playing the last week of the festival. And
it's August 16.
Yeah, and we just bring these great players. This week we have Julie Bevan, who studied with the famous cellist Gregor Piatigorsky. She's phenomenal. She has a 300-year-old cello that's amazing. So she
still plays.
Yeah. She plays it so beautifully. We were rehearsing yesterday on that Spanish piece. And we choose all of our players because they're really expressive and they like to kind of expand the boundaries of the chamber music because we have no conductor and it's one person on every part. And the audience really picks up on this, too, because they can see the interaction of all the players when we play. And these are very intimate concerts. You can get really close. and we talk with our audience, not just at our audience. We enjoy having people, you know, just sitting right with us as we perform. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of this festival.
So it's a classical music festival.
Yes.
And so why did it get named after Beethoven?
Well, there are a couple of reasons. One thing that happened was a board member and I, a friend of ours, Annie Amendola, real sweetheart, you may know Annie, she and I were running around doing something like the Travelocity Gnome, where we carried a Beethoven bust with us, and we were having pictures made with the concierge at the hotels and people in the shops and everything. We were having so much fun, people on the street, and taking their pictures, and everyone recognizes Beethoven, and they recognize Beethoven as classical. Now, one of the things we had run into here in Park City was, first, we were the Deer Valley Chamber Music Festival. Then we changed to the Park City International Music Festival. And it's really not clear, when you say that name, what we are. And it doesn't separate us from all the other Park City events, like Park City performances and things like that. And so as Annie and I were walking around and realized that everyone knew that Beethoven was classical, we said, well, this is perfect. Let's name it the Beethoven Festival.
Yes, and not only that, but even little children would come up and say, that's Beethoven.
Yeah.
Because he's an icon.
Yeah. So we don't only play Beethoven, but we do play some concerts that are all Beethoven.
Yeah. And do you still carry around the bust? Because it was a pretty good sized one.
Yes. sometimes, but we have a lot of those now.
We're getting older, you know. It's harder to carry the bust around.
After so many years. But no, well, we couldn't resist this. The audience can't see this, but today we were at the coffee shop and we found a Beethoven bust kitchen timer that plays for Elise, which, of course, I had to have. So,
well, two of them.
Two of them. Of course, when you find something you like, you have to buy two.
Right. Okay. Again, the website is beethovenfestivalutah.org. Anything
yes.
else you think people need to know about?
I think they should go there and look at the calendar, and they can click on the different concerts, and those lead to the bios of the great players. And I think it's really interesting to see where all they're from. We have one from Poland, and we have one from, well, several from China, who most of them work in the United States now and teach at universities or perform or run their own series somewhere. And we bring them all together here. So I think it's worth it to
and then
go
there's,
and see them.
Jeffrey Solo and cellist and uh-huh. Dora Stevenson, who both worked at USC, studied and worked at Piatigorsky, the great cellist's master class, or his class situation. And they've been coming here for 37 years.
Yeah.
How about that?
Well, yeah, a good mm-hmm. tenure on you guys. That's pretty amazing, 37 years.
It is the oldest classical music festival in Utah, which is kind of fun for us.
Yeah, well, good job. Great.
Thank you.
Thanks for coming in this morning.
Thank you so much.
Leslie and Russell Harlow with Park City's Beethoven Festival. You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. It's 8:50 now. Good morning. Well, Leadership Park City now accepting applications for Class 26. On the phone with details, I have the founder and director of the program, Miles Redeman. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So is this earlier than you usually accept applications, or?
No, it's always been about the same. Right around July 1st, we post it live, and it's on our website now at parkcity.org, which is the city's website. Right on the homepage, it's just under latest news. You can see where you can apply for leadership, and we have the schedule there and the online application. So we've been doing this way for quite a few years now.
Okay. How do you apply? Just by going online and it's done all digitally?
It's all digitally. We're like KPCW. We're trying to keep up with the times. So about 5 years ago, we went to digital because the applications got too long. So it's a very brief application. You can fill it out probably in 15 minutes or so. There's a schedule that you can click on there of all the dates for the year. So it's very important that if people apply, they're going to show up. This is a community-based program that's supported by the whole community. We run it through the city, but it's the city and the county and the resort and the Chamber Bureau and a lot of the other organizations and nonprofits in town that support it. And everybody who gets selected, we usually take around 30 people a year, gets a scholarship to the program, so their costs are covered. So it's our investment in the future of the community.
Okay. What does it take to get in?
Well, it takes a sincere desire to want to participate in Park City. This is not a resume stuffer. So if your only idea is to meet people, or just if you want to learn public speaking, I would say, Toastmasters is probably better for you. If you just want to, give service, there's lots of service clubs. This is an idea to give service, but to also increase your leadership skills and be willing to meet a group of like-minded individuals. Then they become a class and they bond together. And so there's some personal training, but there's also giving back to the community. And along those lines, I'd like to give a shout-out to this year's 25th anniversary class, which just won a prize in yesterday's 4th of July parade, and they're working on wildfire prevention.
Yeah. So what does somebody get out of participating, do you think?
Well, it's kind of an individual thing. I mean, we certainly hope that people get some leadership skill training that they might not have had before, that they get a deeper understanding of how this community works and, what our future might be and where we've come from. But also, I think they get a lot of individual satisfaction out of digging in deeper here. People come here and they say, I want to make Park City home. I want to contribute. And this is certainly one way to do that. There's other ways to contribute, for sure. We have well over 100 nonprofits in the community nowadays. So there's lots of ways to contribute, and all of them are great. This is a kind of a more intense way. You have to really make a commitment. We have 10 programs over the course of the year. So there is a time commitment, and of course the community is investing in you by giving you this training. So it's a reciprocal kind of thing.
Yeah. When does the new class begin?
Well, excuse me. We take applications. Let me just say the deadline for applications is Friday the 23rd of October. August. Friday the 23rd of August. So it's runs through the summer here, but people always sort of wait till the last minute, and I suggest you don't do that. Give yourself a little time. But then the new class is not selected until September, and it actually starts the very beginning of October. So it runs from October through October.
Okay. So people will find out, after Miner's Day sometime, whether or not they're accepted?
Yeah, we have the selection committee after we go on the city tour this year, so around mid-September. There's a selection committee, and I don't sit on the selection committee. Neither does Matt Dias, who runs the program with me, and Minda Stockdale, who also runs the program. We don't sit on the selection committee. That's made up of community members, generally a lot of alumni, but 30 people whom nobody knows who they are. They read all the applications, and they score them, and they're the ones that make the selection. And people will know by mid-September. But, again, it's very important that you look at the schedule before you apply and say, yes, I can make the commitment, because that's what we expect from you. If the community is going to invest in you, you have to make an investment back in the community. And your investment is time and your attention.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, the program itself is free of charge. However, you do require that class members join you on the annual road tour, and that could be, about $100 to $800 to attend?
Yeah, it is. It's about 800 hours to attend, and that is a requirement. And we tell people that up front so that they have a whole year to plan for that expenditure so it doesn't hit them all at once. And, of course, everyone does attend, and we often help some people who can't make that financial commitment totally. But most people can, or at least they can contribute significantly toward it. But that's one of the capstones of the whole program is our 5-day city tour. And in fact, this year we're going in September 4th through 8th. And we also take some community members on that who are not in the leadership program. So if people are interested in joining us on this year's city tour, there's usually a waiting list. We can only take so many people. And, they could call Minda Stockdale at the city and get their name on a list, and we'll let them know within a couple of weeks whether we have room for them.
Okay, you're headed to Crested Butte. This is where you kind of started in your resort.
Well, it is. I actually started the city tour portion of my career in 1973. So this will be the 46th year I'm organizing a city tour. And they've become more and more popular. I think people are interested in seeing other communities and what they're doing and how they're coping with similar problems. All these mountain resort communities and places that are special have been grappling with growth, in many cases explosive growth, as we are. And they all have different solutions. Not, you know, some of them are the same. Some of them have gone further than we have in certain areas. Some of them have lagged behind. But it's always interesting to see what your compatriots are doing in other parts of the country.
Yeah, Crested Butte recently became a Vail-acquired ski operation. It's not owned by Vail Resorts, but the Epic Pass, I guess, works there. Any idea how that's going down with folks who live there?
You know, I'm going there actually this week. Coming up on Tuesday, I'm going over there for a week to check in with everybody. And, of course, I haven't lived there for 33 years, so I'm not privy to everything, but I do talk to them. And I think it's going pretty well. I think they've been pleasantly surprised from the people I've talked to that it's gone pretty smoothly. And it's not, you know, the big bad boogeyman that they might have imagined. Crested Butte, like Park City, is a very independent-minded town, in some ways a little bit more independent-minded than Park City even, and very jealous of their brand and who they are and what that community is. But I think they realize that that Vail has been good for them so far.
Okay. You'll also be making a stop in Montrose, Colorado. What's there?
Yeah, well, you know, Montrose is interesting because Montrose was kind of the typical cow town. I mean, again, I know these places for the last 50 years. But over the last maybe 20 years, it certainly has become a retirement mecca because it does have access to both kind of the Crested Butte area, but also to the Telluride area and to the Grand Junction area. So it's well situated. And it's got a warmer climate. Crested Butte, for instance, is at 9,000 feet. We're at 7,000 feet here. So it's significantly colder. It's a harsher climate there. But a lot of people have been retiring to places like, well, just like we have here, when people say they'll go to Moab or go down to, you know, down to southern Utah. Well, it's the same thing in Montrose. So there's been a big retirement community there now, and they're coping with that. You know, what does that mean, and how does that fit in? So we're going to just be stopping for a short tour there and a lunch there to talk to them about some of the things they're talking about with their seniors.
Okay. Again, Leadership Class 26 applications now available online, parkcity.org. Miles, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you so much, Leslie.